And we're on, mate. So it's good today. We've got Alan Crossan. For anybody that doesn't know Alan's story, Alan owns the Clutha Bar, where tragedy struck 5 years ago, where a helicopter crashed into it and killed 10 people. So Alan's just on, obviously, today to tell his story. So thanks for coming on, Alan.
Thanks for having me.
Obviously, we'll get straight to it and just ask about the Clutha and where were you and stuff with the night of the disaster.
Well, on the night I wasn't there, I was in the house because a couple of weeks before I had a heart attack, and I was just about to go to bed, 22 minutes past 10, a wee bit early, but Friday night, but obviously because of the illness. So I got a call from the manager in the pub, Wee Severio, to say that, well, he never spoke to me, he spoke to my partner Jill, and he said to her, don't tell Alan that the roof's coming. You're like panicking because you thought it was a structural thing. And I got a call 2 minutes after that saying, it's okay, it's a helicopter that's crashed through the roof. And obviously that's panic in the wee guy's mind because he's thinking, the roof's come in, that might be my fault. The helicopter's come through the roof, it's not my fault. You know, it's just an immediate thing like that. So I headed down to the pub. I was there in about 5 minutes. I don't live that far away from it. And it's just surrounded by first responders, emergency services. And within 10 minutes, I knew there were fatalities in the place. And you start thinking how many, you know, so you go through the whole night, just thinking about how that happened, what happened, just standing watching it and all that sort of stuff. Kind of silence, the whole place was in silence. All it was just kind of blue lights and then just people standing waiting to see what was happening, to see how many bodies were taken out.
That's one of the biggest disasters, I think, in Glasgow.
Aye, it was tragic, you know, I mean, we had one a wee bit the year after that with the bin lorry thing.
That's right, John Square.
It was strange, you know, same kind of time. But it was so unusual, you know, about the helicopter situation and how that happened. And people were in listening to music. It hit a part of the building, the only part of the building that was busy, because the rest of the building was closed, you know, and it just came down in that exact spot. It was bizarre.
Because there is still a lot of, I know it's getting took to court, is it next year? 5 years it's been going on?
No, that's a wee bit of a bugbear, that. You know, the FAI, they're not giving a date yet for the FAI. They're just messing about a wee bit.
Has there been a reason? What happened? I've read that much stuff about the helicopter as well. So I've been reading, I know you were coming on, so I've been doing a wee bit of research about the helicopter running out of fuel, where they've took a detour, something not quite right about it, is there?
There's a number of things not quite right about it. If you just look at the helicopter itself and what happened, and forget about anything that happened inside the pub after the crash, generally when there's a crash, well, it's always the final crash, the AAIB get involved, Air Accident Investigation Bureau. Now they investigate why and they try to see what happened. They're not there to lay blame. But by doing things by omission, they can lay blame. So they do various reports, and then they issue a final report, and that goes public. So they issued the final report, and in that it's stated there was the pilot ignored warning signals, but they didn't tell us about three paragraphs they'd taken out. There was a draft report with three paragraphs saying there was a fuel issue. And I've got that draft report, and we exposed them probably about a year ago now, and it was front page in the Sun that the pilot was clear because we found this draft report. So the draft report was then brought to the Scottish Government, and it was then brought up in the Westminster Parliament as well to try and get answers for it. So those answers the questions aren't answered yet. You know, I was given the opportunity to ask the aviation minister at the time, a guy called Lord Armhead, three questions, and he couldn't answer any one of them. You know, were simple questions like who wrote the report, which is AIB, who asked for the stuff to get taken out, then why was it in the first place? And he couldn't answer any of those questions.
It's a bit suspicious, especially if there's been questions took out, and it's for the families, the grieving families that are, they still don't know the answers for 5 years down the line. It's, There's something definitely not right about the situation.
There's people sitting waiting to find out what happened to their sons or daughter or father and all that sort of stuff, you know, and they don't. And I know I never knew this at the time, you know, but people do need closure to move on with their lives, and I didn't really understand that, but they do need it. They need closure with the FAI and closer to answers.
Of course, man.
So the questions they're asking.
Did you know any of them?
Yeah, I know some of them. But the Cliff was such a pub, it was... people came from all around. You know, there's a wee guy, that's the BBC, looking doing a documentary at the end of the year, and they're talking about it's a way that it was like Glasgow in a way, like people came into it from East Kilbride, they came from Diffbrugly and all over. It wasn't like a local pub, they just came for different reasons, you know, there's all sorts of different people there. Now I only used the pub. I never worked in it really. I just used it like a pub. And I would go in, nobody would know me. You know, I'd go and get a beer and things like that sort of stuff with my pals. And it was great, you know, but kind of got any in there, you know.
I know. How long was it closed for? 2 years?
Just under 2 years.
And what was people's reactions when you opened it back up? How was that? How was the feel about the place?
Feeling was good, 99%. You never pleased everybody.
Of course, you never will.
You know, some people saying you should have brought it back to where it was. You know, like, if I could do that, they brought Buddy Holly back, and Elvis Presley and all these people, you know, they're dead, you know, there's nothing you can do about it, you can't change it. It's unfortunate, you know, and I don't think it, if I put that pub back to exactly the same way it was, I wouldn't ever get any staff at work to it, because we're just too scared to run it.
The place was
terrible when you went in and seeing it, so that bit remains closed. That's never going to open.
I think it's a great pub, and like you say, as does, because I know big Billy Connolly's a fan of the pub. And
the murals outside, they're all people that either played in it or drank in it. So there's only one that isn't, and that's Mary Barber. And the reason Mary Barber's up there is because when I was doing the mural, I didn't have any women, because women didn't really frequent pubs like that in those days. You know, and there wasn't really... what's her name? The actress played at the Citizens. She was a Labour MP. That's terrible.
Forget her name. I don't know her name. Do you know?
I'll come back to her in a minute. Anyway, it's Mary Barber and her. So there wasn't a lot of women. Mary Barber obviously governed with the rent strikes and things like that. So all the rest of them, like Frank Zappa used to go into the Victoria. Billy Connolly, obviously, Jerry Rafferty. Spike Milligan. Believe it or not. And when it was a wee story of that, when Prince Charles was up, he was up before, he came up with it right after the disaster. Now I'm the royalist and all like that. Nobody would bore my arse with these.
Oh, yeah. No. After this show, but you will be.
No, I don't bore. Anyway, Prince Charles is up, and then I get friendly with him and his private secretary, a wee guy who is Lord Reith's grandson. Lord Reith was a guy who started the BBC. So this guy's he's a Scottish guy, nice guy as well. So when the first time Prince Charles was up, I says to me, you want to come back up for a pint when the pub opens? I'm like, you know. So I get a call when they find out the pub's open, and it's Prince Charles's lot. They say, can we come back up? Of course you can. Can I bring my wife? You know, that's the sort of stuff. It's Camilla. Okay, I can bring her as well. So they get all the cops and everything, and they arrive, and I'm standing waiting at the bit, and we're walking around, they come at the side door, and Spike Mulligan's up in the hall, and I says to Charles, I said, do you know who that is? Because I knew it was his pal. And Camilla said, oh, that's Spike. And Prince Charles said, he was fucking mental.
Went, what?
Fucking crazy.
I'm not expecting him to swear.
No.
Were they drinking?
No, they were drinking 5 minutes later in the pub. They got into the whiskey.
Are they?
Oh, aye.
How
whiskey.
Were they to meet?
They're brand new. Honestly, brand new. Really nice guy. Mm-hmm. There's always his entourage behind him. You know, they're great people.
Was there many of the entourage?
Hers.
Was there?
Oh, Jesus, aye. Fortunes it must have been. I spoke to staff to know if there was the cops that came in the night before, was just ordinary cops. Then the search guys came in, searched the place. Then another mob came in. Then a special branch came in. Then another mob came in. And then the final, the Royal Guard came in. And that was the last guy, was the guy I spoke to, the Royal Guard. They've got wee badges saying who they are.
Like the Men in Black kind of thing?
Just suits with a wee badge.
Aye.
Guns and all that sort of stuff, you know. Mental. Honestly, crazy stuff. But he was good. The guy was good. You know what I mean? He was
certainly plenty of them for coming up. You've had some characters in that pub.
Oh, I just hope so.
You get some closure because 5 year next year. Do you find
5 year this year?
This year.
Sorry.
March. Do you think it's a cover up then?
No, there's definitely an issue with the report because when they write the report, what happens is that anybody that's named the report, like if it was you, you would get a copy of that report and you can object to it if you want to object to it. The three organisations in that report were the Airbus, which is a billion, million, trillion company, Bond, big company as well, and Scottish Police.
But I read that Bond, the police have hired them again, or?
I complained about that. With they renegotiated their contract. I said, why did you do that? Basically, they had nobody else to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you could have said to them, like, before we do that, do you want to sort of close their stuff? But I don't think anybody thought of that, you know.
How's the victims' families been? Have they been okay?
Aye, they're all good.
Because I know they've not been, anybody's been paid out, or?
Well, they have, but it's been detrimental sums. It's rubbish. Yeah. You know, like, if I lost my father or my son or something like that, it's a problem. Money's the difficult thing. Everybody thinks it's blood money and this and that. It's a Scottish psyche. They think if you're getting money for somebody dying, you know, and if you're chasing it, you're complaining about it, you know, it's that. And insurance companies understand this and they'll play on it. You know, and that's what they do, you know, and they'll come at them, they'll offer them money at a certain time, like Christmas, they'll go, rest 40 grand, you know, you think I could do with that, you know, before you know 40 grand disappears by the time January's finished.
3 months.
And this is what's happened, you know, and people were getting, like, compensation in the tens of thousands instead of the hundreds of thousands, which should have been.
The millions even?
Millions even, aye.
Because are they getting, like, tens of thousands because people need it, they're taking it, then it says, look, we've offered you that, you've accepted that, so there's no more.
Oh, once you accept it, that's it.
Aye.
There's no comeback. No matter what, no matter if we found somebody guilty flying that plane, it doesn't matter.
So it's just bangling a carrot and say, we can give you this.
And well, if you're skint and you're sitting at Christmas and you need some money and you're thinking there's 40,000, you should think that's quite a bit of money at a time.
Especially if you've lost a loved one or...
You want it done. You want it closure again.
That. Move on.
Get it finished and move on.
But obviously, if it's going to court this year, it's going to get...
Well, it goes for an FAI. The FAI is a different kind of thing, and the Procurator of Fiscals are sitting on their arse just now, you know, looking out the window, thinking 5 years to get a fatal accident inquiry. And I'll give you an example. It took half the time to build a Titanic, right? The Ibrox disaster was done in 6 weeks, the FAI. Many people were 60 odd or something, 67 in the Ibrox disaster were killed in that. And this thing's taken 5 years. So what are they doing? So it's not as if the helicopter's under the sea or they had to find bits, everything was there. You keep saying it's a complex case, but what's not happening is people are still thinking, well, what's happening here? You know, we're getting dodgy reports, we're getting another report, we're getting somebody saying this, somebody saying that, we're not getting any closer on the thing.
Does it place doubt in people's minds?
Of course it does.
Do you know what I mean? For 5 years to get answers and... Because with a helicopter, what is it they're saying? They had no fuel. They'd been asked to go back, but the fuel gauges.
The fuel gauges were, there was warning signs for the fuel gauge, saying that you're running out of fuel. And if you're sitting in a car and you've got two people in the car with you, you're on a wee dark lane somewhere and you're driving along, and there's wee signs going up, you're running out of fuel. If you're a passenger, what are you going to say?
Aye, going to the next step petrol station.
But if you're on a helicopter, what are you going to say?
Get down, aye, get home.
Exactly.
Aye.
So you've got two experienced aviators, two cops, and the plane with a guy. So there's issues. They're saying he turned the fuel pumps off. Why did he turn them off? Mm-hmm. So there's issues there, why that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not even sure if he turned the fuel pumps off after he landed. That could happen.
Because I know they went a detour or something as well that he shouldn't have.
Well, I think that's a wee bit of smoke screen.
Think so?
What does that mean, a detour?
I know.
How does it affect it crashing?
How does it affect if your fuel gauge is low? Then
it's low, low.
Aye, there's no getting back fit.
No. This guy was an experienced pilot. He flew in Afghanistan and flew in Iran. He knew what he was doing. He's flying in war zones. You know, if he's going to bring a helicopter down safely, he's the guy I'd want sitting next to me.
Aye.
Seriously happened to that helicopter, and it's been fuel. And there's been an issue, before it was an issue with the way they cleaned the pipes and it may be relating to that.
It's another hard thing to go through as well for yourself.
Oh, you've read it. It's complicated things, like you've lost somebody in a crash like that, which just is really, really unusual. And you've lost a loved one in a crash like that, and then you get this added on it. It's another layer of hurt and time and this and that, the next thing before you can get to the next stage of your life.
It must have affected you really bad. What was the effects, the aftermath, and mentally, physically?
Me?
Because if you already took a heart attack before it, then...
I don't know yet what that is. I'm too busy with all the other shit trying to get people heard, you know. So wait, it might happen, you know, it might not happen, who knows.
How's your mindset been after it all?
Mine, that's strong, because the support I get is amazing.
Yeah,
I get support from all over Glasgow and all over the world.
And so you should, because the amount of charity work that you're doing now and you're involved in, man, is unbelievable.
Well, the charity started after the accident, obviously. What happened was that... I think it was 3 or 4 kids broke into the pub a few days after it. And they drank some drink, and there was a charity cancer, and they took the money out of it. And then newspapers went mental, obviously, they're scum, this, and that. Next thing they wanted me to say they're scum, and I said, no, there's no way, because those kids, why would the kids think it was okay to do that?
Mm-hmm.
So there was a problem there in their mind that it's okay to do that. Probably their parents maybe think it was okay to do that, and even their grandparents. So we're into a generation of people who accept that type of life,
mm-hmm.
which is wrong, and this is what's wrong with our society just now.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have any purpose in their life. They have no direction.
Yeah, they have no drive.
Nothing. And this is what the Clifford Trust tries to give them. Before they get into those situations, we try to give them a purpose or a thing that they can do. They can learn something, learn like guitar, or learn rap or act or something like that. So it's giving them a wee chance. And if they can't do it, at least you've got the chance.
Exactly, and I think...
Instead of sitting out there getting nothing.
Years ago, you're on the streets with the ball, you're looking at the streets, nobody's on the streets, they're sitting in the house with their iPads and phones.
Well,
and,
if they've got that, you know, some kids have not got that sort of stuff.
Deprived areas.
One of the things they've got is they've not got any future, they don't see anything in front of them, except maybe the guy selling drugs down the road and think, well, he's doing all right, I might go down that wee road.
Right for a crime, because they've not got a why, so... When I was used to look up to the people with the big cars and the nice girlfriends selling drugs, but reality is, man, if you're selling drugs, what you're doing is destroying other people's lives to benefit you, to walk about with a fake Rolex and a leased car. Do you know what I mean? And it's all bullshit.
It's a leased life, because it's a long term.
Exactly.
It's no long term being
a short
dealer.
Fix for a unhealthy relationship, because what happens is karma's always going to win. If you do bad in life, like I say, bad shit happens. So the people who I look up to, either dead or in the jail. The good-looking girlfriends back in the day are all fucking fat and overweight, depressed, hating life. So if you're part of that life, now there's young boys now who think selling drugs is cool. It ain't cool to destroy people's lives to benefit your own, because we're not brought on this planet to kind of do these things. It's about helping, and the amount of stuff you're doing for the charities to get the young boys off the street, to get them the dance lessons, the singing lessons.
Well, they've got to get a chance. They've got to be given that chance, but they've got to be given a chance at work as well. You know, it's not a level of employment there in Scotland just now. It's like it's been wiped out. It's wiped out in the 70s with Thatcher's going on. It's not decrying people that just want to work at that kind of level. That's, some people want to do that, go for a beer at weekend, and that's their life. That's not there anymore. You go and work in a call centre, or you go in the streets.
Mm-hmm.
They've no future in front of them. And it's acceptable down generations, 2 or 3 generations, which is a problem.
That's how a lot of people are miserable, because they're not fulfilling their potential as well. They're stuck in a small bubble where they hate their jobs, they hate their life, they need to stay in their jobs because of the bills, and they're not creating their own life and their own happiness.
No, Scotland's got loads of potential. We're inventors,
mm-hmm.
and we find cures for medicines and
telephones,
God knows what.
Inventions.
Now, one of the things that's affected Clutha badly is cancer through different ways. Now, if you imagine the amount of people in Scotland that's in, like, penicillin and various drugs that they've invented and all the rest of it. So let's take all the money that's on Trident up the road in Helensburgh, the billions that's in that, and you give it to a Scottish university, they'd find a cure for cancer, without a doubt.
Oh, aye, 1,000,000%. I believe there's a cure for everything.
There's a cure there, and it's where this shite's up in Hillsborough,
you've got all your cannabis oils, stuff that's curing tumours and cancers, but it's a billion-dollar industry.
And
of course it is.
It's just money, it's greed.
Well, that's the way the medical world works. You know, you'll get medicines like, remember people used to get ulcers?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that, you used to get a pill that would kind of solve that. You can buy them over the counter now because if they've ran out of their time, they can control that. So that's now, you can buy it over the counter. Same with the other stuff like Viagra, you can now buy that over the counter. Don't know if you buy that.
I don't need that.
Oh, yeah.
I know Steph does, but... Who are you, Steph? Definitely.
Well, where do you buy it anyway?
Steph, where do you get them? No Stephen Pettigrew. No.
But you know what I mean? That's an example of how they control that industry. Because it's multi-million pounds.
Billions. Pharmaceutical drugs kill more people than any other drug in the world.
So they might not want a cure for cancer.
They don't want it, of course. Of course they don't.
That's just the way these guys work.
If it's making them money, greed and powers, it's poisoning men's souls. And that's why people... I believe in everybody's get creative, everybody's an individuality, but the scary thing is, the richest place in the world is a graveyard. Why? Because people go and people die without releasing that book, that music, showing that skill that they've had, painted that paint. Everybody's got potential, but they die.
A lot is in the arts as well, you know, and that's what we try to drive, you know, music. Because Glasgow's a UNESCO city for music, and obviously Cliffs is a big music pub, but it takes people forward, you know, and it's a great thing. There's so many talented musicians in Glasgow as well. Look at what you've produced, even just now, like Paolo and Cena and things like that. Mm. Basically.
Oh, he's done amazing.
Stuff's brilliant.
But it's, people think when somebody, the problem with human beings, when somebody fails, they quit. Once or twice, they quit. But failure is just an extra step to your goal. Do you know what I mean? We look at things different. Sometimes you can fail up to 1,000 times, but as long as every time you fail, it's just sharpening your arsehole and getting better at that thing that you're failing at.
Well, failure seems to be a kind of British thing or maybe a Scottish thing. There's no such thing as failure in America.
They'd succeed.
Well, look at that arsehole Trump. He's the president and he's failed all through his life. You know what I mean? He's failed in everything.
Failure's what it's all about. You're never going to be happy every day and succeed every day. Failure's just a step closer to your end product, the goal that you want to achieve.
It's a lesson. Learn a lesson. That's the way it is.
But as soon as somebody fails two or three times here, they quit.
Aye. But do you know what I mean? It's a psyche that you need to develop.
It's the mindset.
And it's confidence.
Self-esteem.
It's confidence. You'll find that kids that go to private school are more confident than kids that go to ordinary schools. 100%.
Because... it's their parents, I know, that's
of course
that's struggling for money. And
thing.
If you go, I went to St. Cuthbert's and Postle, and it's everybody's fighting and arguing, man. It's the stress of the people. I stayed in Stonyhurst Street, which is a big circle of houses in Postle, so it's like a fucking, it's like, the amount of, everybody's stuck in a wee room, and they're so angry, not tight, because they've got bills, and everybody's arguing and fighting, so that just passes down, that energy passes down, and the people who broke out of the cliff and stole the money, that can pass down for generation to generation, and it's accepted, because I know you were fine about it, you never even...
Well, I don't think, I mean, they've done wrong, you know, and they'll get probably the wrong thing, they'll probably get a jail sentence, from, I think they have.
They still got to go up.
But funnily enough, I was with the guys at Sonny Govan, and they said one of the boys that broke in, they help him. So indirectly, we help him. And he's actually all right. He's just easily led.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that happened a few weeks ago down there.
That's good. But it is all right to make mistakes. I've done a lot of wrong in my life. Do you know what I mean? But I'm trying to rectify it on no living the past and accept it. And do you know what? We're all human beings. We all make mistakes. And it's because I know you're passed for the Gorbals. You're Gorbals boy.
Well, I never went to school.
Did you know?
No. My dad died when I was 14, I just chucked him. Apart from that, school was a pain in the arse anyway. When I was in primary school, it was good, because I had a scholarship for Allan Glen's, which was a private school, but I couldn't afford books and things like that, so I never went. So I got to secondary school, first part of secondary school was good, and then they moved us from that school into a comprehensive, which was about 500 miles away, and it took you 5 hours to get there on three buses and all the rest of it. And by the time you got there, you were late, and there was this bastard waiting at the gate for you to to nip you and punch you and things like that. It was a teacher, you know. So, and one of my friends today, who we met today, actually, done me through the same thing. You know, so what you went, you said, fuck, I'm not going to school. So you just stoated about. You know, and it was bizarre, you know. So that's how, you know, so you went at 14, my dad died, I just went, that's it, I'm out of here.
Kind of give you a free rein to do what you wanted.
Well, you can have first thing I did was run away to London with two lasses and ended up in a brothel.
Sounds like my kind of night.
Being like Viagra, Steph.
So I was down there for a couple of weeks, you know, and get chased up the road.
Did you? That's what, because my old man, he used to go to like London and Brighton, but he used to all do the shoplifting.
You go to work. Well, so I never done that, you know, but.
Lying bastard. Is that where you went, London?
I went to London just to, because it was London, you know, then after.
What
that,
age?
14.
That age you went?
Sorry, I was about 15 and a half. See, when my mother died, when my father died, me and my brother's 2 years younger than me, my father got involved with these guys from the BTI, the Bible Training Institute, and they were missionaries. They used to come into the Gorbals to practice before going to Africa and things like that. So he got friendly with them, and a lot of them were really wealthy people. And one of the guys was a guy called John Withy, who had a place in Northern Ireland. His family owned a shipbuilding company called Furness Withy, and he bought this place. So it was like a Christian retreat, if you like. So when my father died, he must have wrote to my mother, because we never had a phone. He said to send the boys over and he'd look after them for the summer and we can go and work. She said, right, okay then. So she gave us some money and said, away to Sion Mills in Northern Ireland. I was just about 15 and he was 13. Bus, Ireland. That was that. Nobody taken us there. We got lost somewhere, we're going, where are we?
There's no phones, there's nothing to Google or name apps.
There you go. So we arrived there and we went into this big cush, you know, it's a huge big place. And it was haunted, you know, it's just to frighten the shit out of us. Because we were boys for the city, it's all full of light, everything's dark. And it's all that Christian stuff and devils and this and that next thing, you know. So during the day it was good, but at night it was murder. We used to lie in the same bed cuddling each other.
So what did you, in your back in the day, what did you used to do then, young, what wise?
Well, after that, I went to work as an apprentice jockey, believe it or not.
Did you? Yeah. He's at it.
Honestly, God. Paddy Chesmore done it earlier, and I went down to Les Kennard in Moncton.
How did you know?
And I was getting taller and taller, and I was worried. I thought, I'm not going to happen. This is, I'm not going to be like this. So I wrote a letter to Lester Piggott, and I said to him, what height are you? Because I'm worried about getting tall. And he wrote back and said, I'm 5'7¼" or something like that, and I've passed your letter on to our trainer. And that trainer was a guy called Noel Merlis, who was just starting out. He turned to be one of the top trainers. But I used to go to the horses and things like that. So they paid you, you got £1 a week, 7 days a week. Started at 6 in the morning to 8 at night. And they fed you crap because, you know, keep your weight and sort of thing. But I loved riding horses. Man.
Did you gamble?
No, but at a later stage in my life, maybe about 8 years ago, I had a racing club, so I had about 12 racehorses at one time. Believe it or not, one of them was called Ibrox.
Is that?
Called that, I sell it to the Ibrox farmers.
And they, you know the way it is, people, they buy names and they buy colours.
They worked.
Yeah, that's good business.
I had lots of horses, you know, different horses. I had horses running in Royal Ascot as well, and that's the time. My horse was second favourite in the Royal Hunt Cup. Mm-hmm. The Queen's present and the cup. No, I said, fuck that. I'm not going to get a nitty bow and all that. I'm not doing that. That one anyway. Actually, it cost a bit of hassle. It's a typical horse for the Gorbals. Uh-huh. You know, it started, took out the favourite in the stalls and all that, and it was jumping up and throwing. But I thought, I'd finish my division, but you were down there at Royal Ascot, you know, the shit that goes with that, you know what I mean?
Aye, or that's arty farty stuff.
So I went to the apprentice job, carried the owner to the selling them because they're costing a bloody fortune.
Uh-huh. That's brilliant. But did you ever go into the gambling bad? Or?
No. But people who were involved in it was strange. People were involved in the horses would buy a share on your horse. So I'd sell a syndicate and sell the shares in it. And then they'd get the information, say the horse is going to win today, it's going to do this, that, the next thing. Right, 40 grand on it. £40,000, this businessman. Uh-huh. Put on a horse, you know what I mean? It's mental.
But that's the way in that circle, you know, they know you're not going to be stoning in the bookies. The average asshole like myself who was gambling all the time, no having a clue, just betting on luck. If you're in that circle, you kind of know it's got a chance and what's knowing. Do you know what I mean? That's how people have got the big suits and the big cars, but for the average person in the bookies, they ain't got a clue. Do you know what I mean?
I don't think the big guys have got a clue either. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. You know, because as everybody would do the same thing. But sometimes, you know, I know a story, and it was a wee race at a time. My horse was winning, and it was running up, going two lines ahead, and other jockeys were shouting, my jockey, get in there, boy, because they've got the money on it as well. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So you're like, very good. You know what I mean? But I never bet, you know, I never bet. The only time I had a horse running the air, and it was running the Friday, and I went down the Friday to watch it run, and the ground was too sticky. So I was watching the race, I go pished, like I normally do, because I can drink for Scotland, but the next day I'm totally gubbed. I was out the game.
Hangover fear.
Like 3-day hangovers I get, they're just wipeouts, you know. So the trainer phones up and says, we're going to run the horse today because it's up anyway, it's up for Yorkshire. We're going to run it, cost you that money, so might as well take a chance in the next day. So it's the day before the race before the Gold Cup, and it runs, I'm sitting watching. So I go out of my bed, sitting there watching the telly, not even a bet or nothing. Wallop, geyser, 10 lengths or something like that, 25 grand race, 25 to 1, not got a penny on it. All the guys in the club are on the telly with a cup and all that, going,
loving life.
And I'm sitting there hangover.
Made it 100 times worse. Are you drinking? How's you drinking that now?
Nah, not as much.
Nah. Did you camp? Did you quiet down a bit after?
I can't say, no, it's not extremes. It's just like if I go out a drink, we have mental on it, you know. But
it's a Glasgow mentality, but that. I don't drink that anymore. I can't. I go missing. So I do.
What happens? It's just a different. It's just the way people are sometimes.
I would love to, but we have one or two. But for me, man, I don't want to go home.
Well, I've done that as well, you know. And maybe I was married to a psychopath at one point. You know what I mean? And she was just fucking nuts, and I wouldn't go. And I was working as a photographer, you know. So I'm working with models and this and that. And next thing you're going out and you're getting. And then you go home, you're a psychopath who thinks you're up with all sorts of things, and you're like, fuck this, man.
Especially if you're working with a model.
But you just go, I'm away, you know, I'm not going home, you know, and that was it.
Was that an old marriage?
I was going stupid, you know.
I'll tell you
right, but I was about 30 odds or something, I got married, and the day I got married, I went to the carnival and got my face painted as a clown.
So we were at the wedding.
That was the start. It was uphill for me, wasn't it?
How many times have you been married?
Just once, but I just got married last year.
Congratulations.
In Lake Como.
Did you? Where's that?
Yeah, Italy.
Nice.
And I had a wee boat and all that, and we never told anybody.
That's the best way.
Ah, it's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
Nowadays it's all.
I never even understood it was on Italian. I only understand wee bits of Italian. That's the best way. Pasta and...
I think nowadays, but there's too much pressure for people to get married.
Of course there is.
It's only what is it, a ring? And I think a lot of lasses are judged their marriage on how big their fucking diamond ring is.
Or the photographs. Why you got a photographer at a wedding?
Do you know what I mean? And some people are spending 50, 60
grand.
3 grand,
4 grand on a photographer.
Wedding. I just think it's a wee bit played out. I think, I've said it before, love is within. You've got to kind of love yourself. People always search for that wee bit of puzzle. I need to get married. I need to get a house. But as soon as you're there, it's
all
like,
labels.
It's like, you're caged up.
I want a Hugo Boss wedding.
Aye,
and all that, you know,
it doesn't mean shit. You could put a bit of rope
around something. Well, did you know Hugo Boss designed Nazi
uniforms?
You know what I mean?
Aye.
Yes, people got these labels. It's just all
including myself, but I was that way inclined materialistic. It always felt better with the labour it was on the back. But now I just don't. It's just on the mindset. You see all these lasses who work all week, all month to buy a pair of fucking Louboutins, and they've done all their money because it gives them makes them feel a wee bit special. But
well, there is that, you know, there's nothing wrong with feeling special, but
I know, but if you're
wasting money,
if you're not living beyond your means, because
if you're living with a credit card,
and I think a lot of people get themselves in too much stress and try to keep up with the Joneses and try to keep up with all the shite they see in magazines. And
but that goes back to that bastard Thatcher again, because you're back into the 70s and this individuality, mm-hmm. and you're not working as a family. If you look at, for an example, homelessness just now, and that's the thing that you've done, right? It's all the homeless issues. You take that back to the 50s and 60s and the Gorbals, there wasn't a lot of the same kind of level of homelessness, and there wasn't the same housing stock that you've got. And the reason for that is because people took people in. When in our house, we had two rooms with nine in our family. My mother and father made a living. And then we took in two of my pals at different times. And they just bunked up wherever they could. We took in another wee family whose one of the boys was killed in the Bridge Street subway. There's three of them. So it didn't really matter how many of us in that house at the time. When I was born in a single end, and my mother and father stayed with my dad's sister. There was already, he had three, so it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, we had 2, 6, 7, 8, 9. There was already maybe 10 people in that single end. Mm-hmm. And there's no anybody out the street. And that's the difference now with then, is the family society, which you'll get with different cultures like Asian, Jewish, and that, the next thing. But with ours, now it's just like, get to fuck.
But nobody's why to accept anybody then, because everybody's got fear now. They're scared that they're fucking paedophiles or rapists. Or everybody's scared of each other. Back in the day in Stonyhurst, we used to have a guy coming around selling candy apples. Hey, Wills, can a guy in bags? If you were going by somebody off the street or somebody, you wouldn't buy it.
Yeah.
Because everybody's riddled with fear. Everybody's got their own problems and they don't really want help as much. Since times went on, people are scared to help and they think, oh no, man, what if something happens? So nobody's want to take the chance.
No, you wouldn't be able to do that now anyway, the way things were. People were stuck in that trap that they want their house to be their house and mm-hmm. they're not caring about anybody else or anything like that. It's maybe a different mindset we should have about that type of thing.
I think it's so feared. It's been drilled into people's head. But
there is that. But that's done through the news that we get and social media and all that sort of stuff.
And in life, man, we're all going to have lulls. We're all going to hit lows, man, where we're going to need people to help out. And I'm lucky enough to have good family and pals that have helped me through my struggle, obviously, with gambling. And if I never had them, man, I'd have been on the streets. But I was always a gift.
Did you bet any of my horses?
No. If I knew that, I wish I did know, 25-1.
Well, I don't know. I mean, sometimes I never win.
I just think I've been blessed in a way for him to guide me. They always seen potential in me, but gambling's one of the biggest addictions, you know.
Well, it's worse than drink because you can't afford it.
You hide it, man. So it's a mental.
Yeah, you can lose more money.
It's a mental blockage of the game. Do you know what I mean? Just in Saracen Street where I stay, it's bookies, pubs, Chinese restaurants, Indians. So it's just all garbage. You're drinking, you're gambling, you're eating shite food as well.
Most bookies are in poor regulars. You don't get a bookie in the mails, will you?
Nah, because they're too smart. They're too clever.
But you'll get 10 in the next door to each other.
There's 5 bookies in Saracen Streets.
All with 3 machines each.
Aye, and it's constant. Do you know what I mean? So they're feeding that habit.
Sure, why? There's just a law just got passed last week about the machines that should have scrubbed these out of these places, and they went, no, we'll just reduce the number. Why? Because we're getting the tax on it.
Aye. It's just money.
We're going to lose jobs, 5,000 jobs, my arse. You know, create jobs somewhere else for somebody sitting in the bookies.
There's always jobs that can be created, do you know what I mean? I know you do, because we're talking, you do a lot of charity work. What's the plans then?
Well, the Clutha Trust, we've got, what we do, it's evolved into helping other wee charities that do work like us, or other wee groups that are not charities that require help, like money and things like that. And that's we divert into that, or we give them music teachers, or we give them equipment. For instance, we've got Radio Lollipop and the Southern General. They need equipment. I'm just shorting a couple of things for them, for their kids, for a wee studio. There's a Kojak one in Castlewood we help. There's Shining Stars, another wee one in Coatbridge. The lassie's brilliant through there. She does stuff with kids that have got learning difficulties and teaching them drama. It's all these wee kind of units that we help through that kind of way that we can raise money. And the way we raise money is through a lottery, which evolves back to the racehorse kind of thing, called Donate to Win. Mm-hmm. And what you do is you donate £1. It's just £1 a month and you can win a prize. Mm-hmm. So last month's prize was Paolo Nutini's guitar, signed. One before that was Rod Stewart's guitar. We've got other things like holidays and meals and this and that and next thing. But it's open for other charities to go in it, because we've got other charities that link in it as well, like Deaf Blind Scotland, Epilepsy Scotland, various others. And they get a share of that as well. Mm-hmm. Any money we get go straight to the charity.
See, that's brilliant, because I've had a meeting and this is a great charity, so get involved. What's the website where people can look into?
Donate to Win.
Donate to Win. So if you donate £1, you can also win signed guitars.
There's olives, there's meals, there's stacks of prizes. The good thing about it is you give us £1 a month, it's £12 a year, it's buttons, it's nothing. Mm-hmm. And we can then say to other wee charities, right, you do a wee programme and like plan for that and we'll give you the money.
That's great.
Shows you where you go on your website, shows you where the money goes to. The only thing that goes off that pound is 8 pence, and it's a merchant fee for the transaction.
Mm-hmm. So for anybody listening, watching, man, check this website. It's a great website and a lot of good charities. Plus, you get to win.
Good chance of winning.
Aye, aye.
See, Chris, I don't like asking people for money. You know, like I'm going to do run round a block maker or something, like he's a fiver. Or he's a tenner, not to do it, you know, that
I would do it for a fiver.
But you know what I mean? So rather than do that, I say, people, there's a chance of winning a prize. He's a pound.
Mm-hmm.
That's all we're wanting, quid, nothing else. And we can build it up, we can then work at promoting that and get people to do it.
Have you got any festivals then coming up now, charity
we're
events?
We're working one just now in August, and it's with a pal of mine up in Rue Allen. And we're looking at a headline act. I don't know who yet, so I don't want to say who it is just now, because we're looking at a headline act. The festival will be over 2 days, and we might run two or three a year. It's in a big equestrian centre. We'll run buses from a city centre, and it'll be undercover. You can camp. We're even thinking of using some of the stables as rooms with hammocks in it, which are a bit quirky.
Mm-hmm.
And there'll be all sorts of different food. There'll be other things on it you could try, like quad biking and trapeze and... God knows what. There'll be loads of stuff. Knowing Robert, he'll put on a lot of wacky stuff.
Because you're doing millions. You're doing the charity work you're doing is unbelievable, man. So you should get the recognition.
I'm not bored of Mars about that. The beauty about the charity work is what I get. Say, like, go to the shining stars and all the way and sing for you.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's good.
That's the product. That's the feel good factor.
Oh, God, that is better than anything. It's better than any money.
So that's when you started doing all the charity work, was after what happened to the Cliffer?
I used to do stuff before, like. I've done a calendar for Cash for Kids, and it's up in the office just now. It's like, I recreated Hollywood stars. I recreated local stars into Hollywood stars. Like Marty Pella was Valentino.
Mm-hmm.
Lorraine Kelly was some other wee star, I can't remember her name. It was that Jared Kelly was Charlie Chaplin. He was brilliant at it. Mm-hmm. Absolutely brilliant. He was one of the best. And, you know, so it's things like that. And that calendar made 40 grand or something like that, you know. So that went into the Cash for Kids. One of the things we'd done at the start of the Clutter thing was we released a CD, and we sold 40,000 copies, which should have been in a charge. But the way we sold it through people that we knew, like Asda and things like that.
Uh-huh.
So it sold at the counter. It's a cracking CD.
How do you know we could release it again?
I'm thinking about doing it. I'm going to speak to the guys and maybe get it out again. We'll maybe do it near the 5th anniversary and we'll raise it for awareness to what's not happening with the FAI and what's not happening with the answers that our people need.
Are you going to get answers this year?
Probably not. I'll probably never get answers.
Do you not think you'll ever get the truth?
No, never. There'll always be hidden stuff. There's lots of stuff that happens. You know, stuff that happened with Glasgow City Council. There's stuff that happened with a charity, you know, a wee guy carrying on had cancer, which is going, I can't say much about that because it's going to, we'll be going to court. There's people that came in to try to do things, they weren't really doing things for charitable reasons. The council were a bit dodgy through a lot of the stuff they'd done. The AIB were dodgy. And I was told they were going to be dodgy. I met a guy came over from America to meet me, a guy called Jerry Skinner. You can check, you can Google him. Jerry is a lawyer, an aviation lawyer, and he worked for the Lockerbie. So he took, what happens is, the lawyer takes it from where you buy your ticket. So he was Midwest America, so the people bought the ticket there, he worked for them. So they got a group collectively, and that's their problem. We didn't get a group together to fight these people as a group. Get a group together, and they've been up against Gaddafi. He got a contract out of them, £1 million, Gaddafi to bump him. And he said, my house is in a wood somewhere, and it's around, it's got machine guns, you know, mad Americans with tanks and things like that. So he's got Gaddafi after him, and he threatened Gaddafi. He said, we're going to shut your country down unless we get proper compensation. So it was something like 2.1 billion they got off him. And each family, I can't remember the numbers, you know, they got a big settlement for Lockerbie, aye. So Jerry's sitting in the pub with me, the sauce all broke up and all that, and he's telling me, this is what you need to do, you need to watch them. The AIB is like putting the fox in charge of the chicken coop, you know, it's like an American set, and he's saying, they're looking after themselves, they're not doing anything for you.
So they're kind of want to get money for themselves?
Well, no, they're looking after they're under pressure. You know, the AIB are under pressure from Airbus. And Airbus are saying, no, you better not put that in that report because we'll just sue you. And they're so powerful and they think, well, shit, I better not do that. You know, so we need to take that stuff out of the report. Whether that's the right thing or not, I don't know. But we need to know why it was taken out. Tell us why it was taken out. And if it's a valid reason, we'll go with it.
Who's anyway, going to give you the answers?
Well, we might get it at the FAI.
Is that the ones that's
contacted? The FAI is our...
Are they working with you? Are they backing you?
Not really. That's a procurator fiscal. But it comes to court, and we'll put in big lawyers to cover it. We've got really ready to go to QCs, all lined up, ready to go for them. And we'll find out. Our guys will ask the questions, and we'll raise it in the different parliaments, the Scottish Parliament, and we'll raise it in Westminster, why these things are happening. And we'll not finish until we get an answer from them. We'll force them to give us an answer. So, Scottish Government's far more easily known that in the Westminster, obviously.
So the guy from America, what was his?
Aye, so Jerry was on his way to Romania. He runs an orphanage over there. So I says to him, what are you doing next then? He said, well, I've gone to the orphanage and I'll go back to America and I'm serving that right in Vladimir Putin. Oh, fucking what?
That's some
news. Move away for the windy a wee bit, you know, just in case. Mm-hmm. So you're thinking, so I checked him out later and there's the headlines in America. Jerry Skinner feared his life because of Vladimir Putin. This is for the Ukraine one. And he did serve it on him.
So is it all presidents now he goes after? Top boys?
Well, he goes after the country who was responsible for the... Mm-hmm. He helped us. Well, he had to be instructed by the families who'd lost the loved ones, or the lawyers and that, but you tend to find what happened. Ours was splintered. Somebody would go to that lawyer, somebody would go to another lawyer, somebody would go to another lawyer, somebody would go to a wee guy that was good at selling houses. The wee guy good at selling houses ain't an aviation lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
He's going up against these arseholes for London that are on £1,000 an hour.
Bigwigs.
That I'm up against, you know.
How much support have you got? Because I think this is a massive talking point that I don't want to say it's swept under the carpet, but it kind of has in a way in it, it's kind of forgot about. It was 5 years later.
Well, that happens. That happens in the media. What happens is that you're only strong for a period that is of interest. So our period of interest is the anniversary of the Clutter. That's the only time that ever happens. Some wee stories will pop up now and again. Various things. There might be a story coming up in the next couple of weeks about the Procurator Fiscal's office, which depends on a couple of things. I can't say again to them, but because it's a court case, you know, so that might come up in maybe 2 or 3 weeks and it'll be the headlines. And then they'll come back in 5 years again, you know, what's happening. And then you're back in the telly again, you're back in the radio saying the same thing.
You forgot about.
There you go again.
Has there never been like a campaign or a big walk to get people to behind it, man? The people of Glasgow, especially.
Well, people of Glasgow are behind it, you know. But again, it's back to that thing again. It's the interest in it. And if I say to you, I've not been properly compensated yet, you go, you're fucking kidding. And if not, they still owe me money. That's 5 years down the line, but they try to start me out. But they like doing that because we're not getting that because you've not supplied a wee bit of paper. You have, but we don't understand it. Supply it again in a different form, you know, come up with that. And they're doing that because you're so noisy about what happened, you know, or sticking up for other people's rights and stuff like that. I don't give a shit about it.
They don't want you creating noise, they want you to shut the fuck up and go on with your life.
They just
want
to put a line under that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the lawyer they've got working from in London, let's say she's owned, for talking sake, £600 an hour, 5 years. She doesn't want that case shut, does she?
No, she's sitting in a big mansion now, isn't she?
Aye. You know, well, it makes sense, doesn't it? Why would you want to close it early?
Mm-hmm.
Let's keep fighting that bastard crossing.
Are they fighting against you?
Well, they're not paying it.
How's the police been, mate?
Police are brand new. Firemen are brand new. I know all these guys now. The fire guys, first responders, all these guys, they come into the pub. The fire brigade have believe it or not, a burns night in the pub. And they raise money for charities and they gave us, it's always Clutter, they gave money. And if I crank night, police are all great as well. They're all good. See all the guys, it's front line. It's a wee bit like that Manchester thing it was announced today about the guys couldn't go into the bombing thing. But they're told not to go in.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing they can do. They can't deploy themselves, if you like, self-deploy, whatever it's called. They can't do that. They'd lose their job.
Health and safety.
Health and safety.
If you get told, because I know firemen struggle, I know, because some
That's the fireman of Smain, huh?
Aye, somebody fell down a ditch and they could have, they could have got them.
That lasted, can't get them.
But they could have got them, but they've been warned, you can't get any health and safety reasons. It must break their fucking heart, man.
Nightmare for them. And I know a lot of these guys, you know, I know them personally, you know, and they know that situation. It's difficult for them.
There's situations that they can reach these people, they can save them, but they're told health and safety first. It's all red tape. But no doubt you'll get that, because if you lose that person, that's going to live with you to the day you die. Do you know what I mean? Knowing that you could have saved a life, but you're told for health and safety reasons.
Well, even, it's not just saving a life. When you realise that somebody, if somebody's dying in a situation, whether it's like Clifford or not, some other kind of situation, and they're dying, say they're trapped somewhere, and they die there because they were left. Now, if you manage to get them out, and they die in a hospital with their family around about them. It's a different scenario. No, it's a different scenario because they're with their family and their family's with them when they die. If they're dying alone, trapped, and nobody helping them, it's a different thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that is precious in its own right to try and save their life even until they die,
mm-hmm.
whether they're dying or not.
It must have been a heavy burden, man, on you. It must have. Or the stress and pressure, it still must be.
It's not.
Do you know, you're handling it well, aren't you?
No, it's not. It's more stress on people who lost their family. It's more stress on people who've not got a house. It's more stress on people. My life's okay. I've got money and things like that, and I go on holidays and all that sort of shit, you know. My life's easy. You know, all I do is stick up for people or write stuff or go on things and say, talk about it. That's easy. You get tired in the afternoon after this, I've been anchored. That's just part of the drugs that you're taking. It's not drugs like, you know, it's drugs like keeping you alive, you know what I mean?
Are you on much medication? Is that for the heart?
Aye. That's a load of shite. It's murder. I forget all the time, and all.
That could be a good thing.
My partner, who's now my wife, lays out in a wee rose, you know, for me. You know.
But you're doing brilliant, and no doubt we'll do charity work in the future, because I've just organised
is this for me?
A charity festival in St Luke's, the 25th of April. So, anybody looking for tickets?
We'll put that on our social media. Our social media is really strong.
Good.
Because just after the accident, it was about a million and a half or something.
Was it?
Aye, but about half a million, isn't it?
Good, man.
It's the 25th of April at St Luke's.
25th of April, we've got comedians, my good pals, Dee Maxwell, Gary Falls, comedian, two fucking nut jobs. We've got bands, live bands, and we're doing the screening of the documentary Homeless at Christmas.
Well, good.
So we're doing like a wee festival fundraiser.
Still looks as good.
I know.
Boys are good up there.
Oh, it's beautiful. Yeah. And the people are nice, man.
Yeah, they're good lads, aren't they?
Because we want to create enough noise. I think Glasgow's going to be at the forefront for a lot of charity work, especially homelessness.
Eventually, the Clith will be a charity. Mm-hmm. That's a long-term aim, is to turn the Clith or the pub into a charity.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be used for charitable purposes, like as it is just now. You know, we use it for the fire brigade guys, like the Burns Night and various things like that, so they can have a night in it and raise money for whatever charity they get. And I'm no precious about the Clith or charity and the way, like, keeping it for it. I'd rather everybody share from it. And that's why I share the donate to win thing. If you're going to donate to one, you could put in a fiver a month and pick five charities.
Mm-hmm. So you can share it, not just one charity, you can share it between five or six.
Well, you pick a charity you want to go to.
Whatever's most close to your heart, sometimes like stroke, cancer, homeless, whatever. I think it's great, mate, and like coming on today and telling your story. It can't be easy for people to come on and obviously talk about the past and what's going on, but I appreciate it, and I think people need to hear the story, actually, what's going on with the Clough, and
of course they do.
How much fucking about is going on. And
well, the more we keep in focus until we resolve and get the answers, the better. And that's why I do these things.
No doubt we'll do all the charity work. So check your charity for people watching the charity website for people to go on and
donate to win.
Donate to win.
It's a donate to you won't win.
It's a great cause. All the money goes to charity. It's not as 4%, 8% like a lot of big charities. I'm just grateful for you coming on today, Alan, and telling your story, mate.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. I hope you get the closure that you deserve, man, and all the other families, man. Thank you.
Thank you.